Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Hello and welcome to What Goes Up, a weekly markets podcast. My name is Mike Regan. I'm a senior editor at Bloomberg.
And I'm Valdana Hayek, a cross-asset reporter with Bloomberg.
And this week on the show, well, stocks, bonds, crypto, commodities, whatever. Just about every asset class is suffering right now. And to add salt to the wounds, chaos in British markets is reverberating around the world. Many strategists are cutting their year-end targets for the S&P 500 as the Federal Reserve doubles down on its inflation-fighting strategy. Plus, the U.S. midterms are coming up, which could cause even more market turbulence. What's it all mean for the rest of the year? We will get into it with a veteran Wall Street strategist. But first, Valdana, it's exciting news this week. We have finally gotten more than 300 ratings on Apple Podcasts. And you know what that means? That means, I believe the deal was, you now have to accept me in your professional network on LinkedIn.
That was not the deal. That was not.
Isn't that the deal?
You are still pending approval on LinkedIn.
I'm still on read there. You know, Emily Grafeo co-hosted one podcast with me.
And your friends on LinkedIn?
And then she invited me to join her professional network on LinkedIn.
That's nice of her.
Nothing.
No, the deal was that I reveal my high school nickname. I think.
Okay, so right? You're ready to reveal your high school nickname?
Well, first I have to congratulate you because this is a pretty good ploy to get people to write reviews. it was a smart idea.
Some may call it a gimmick.
A gimmick.
And I'm fine with that, actually, if you want to call it a gimmick.
It's fun, and the reviews are fun. Remember somebody asked me if I would marry them?
Yeah.
In one of the reviews. I accepted. I did. We're happily married now.
Love is love. Love is love.
But to reveal my high school nickname, I think we'll have to wait until we do craziest things in markets, and then maybe I'll reveal it there.
All right. Sounds good.
Deal?
Perfect.
Deal. Okay, deal. Perfect. But I think you heard our guest this week laughing in the background, and I do want to bring him in. I'm so happy to have him on the show. Julian Emmanuel, Evercore ISI's Chief Equity and Quantitative Strategist. And I've been trying to get him on for so long, and I'm so happy he's here.
Great to be here. You know, the problem was a little pandemic got in the way, but here we are.
A little pandemic.
Just a minor pandemic, yeah.
Yeah.
A minor hiccup. But Julian, so Mike already mentioned what's been happening in the UK over the past couple of days. So maybe just to start, you can tell us how important what's going on in the UK right now is for global markets.
So I think the backdrop here is just to understand that for investors, the storm that has been 2022 thus far, the dominance of macro imperatives across all assets has really been unprecedented. And it really goes back to this idea that after 25 years of quiescent inflation, we had a breakout in the readings. That's now been over a year. And obviously, really feeding into the Fed's imperative to get inflation under control by going on this, unprecedented degree of hiking. We think about the current status as something from that movie, Supersize Me. You've done 375 Supersize. You might do a fourth in November. But what's happening is that this is the kind of, rapid acceleration and tightening that reverberates across the globe. Obviously, the conduit has really been the strength in the dollar feeding into the UK. You've had a leadership change, the Queen's passing, a new prime minister, a new government, just total huge challenges in a market that had already been showing strains, frankly, since the Brexit vote in 2016. So really, testing the outer bands of volatility across every asset that's in the UK.
What I find fascinating about it, Julian, is this volatility we've seen in the bond market globally, but especially this week. And for listeners who are listening to this later, we're recording here. It's Wednesday afternoon. So the big news today was the Bank of England came out and said, they will basically buy all of the British bonds they need to sort of tame the bond market. So I'm looking at the 10-year British gilt yield. Down 50 basis points in a single day. U.S. yields as a result, Canadian yields, everything is down like 20-some basis points. I mean, for one thing, these are just, I think, nightmarish moves from sort of a how do you price the risk-free rate when it's jumping around like this? But I wonder in particular, what do you make of how UK is kind of leading the bond market globally now? Is it, is it just sort of a relative value or correlation that should cause US yields to revert back when UK yields do? Or is it, is there sort of an assumption going on that the BOE is foreshadowing what's to come from other central banks, or eventually is the Fed and the ECB going to have to come out and say, yeah, we'll do whatever it takes to keep bond markets in check? What exactly is the relationship there, do you think?
Well, if you go back to the end of last week, it really all started with a point in time, call it Friday morning, where one looked up on one screen and every single indicator, every single asset, every single market was completely red. Okay. Whatever it was, indiscriminate selling, that to us was the start of this emotional phase that because it was clear the policy mismatch between the new Truss government and Kwarteng, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and where the Bank of England felt it needs to go, and that's an open concept, which is why I keep changing tenses, is that it's really caused this instability that got some feeling as if there was this idea that the UK was about to become an emerging market, and seeing the kind of volatility in the bond markets there that one had seen throughout time in places like Mexico during crisis, or Brazil, or, you know, going back to the Asian tiger crisis in 1997, that type of volatility. And frankly, because so much of UK debt is denominated in sterling, that wasn't necessarily going to be the way it would play out. But nevertheless, the markets have become just very, very illiquid, and people got very, very afraid of buying bonds in an environment where there's still no concrete evidence that inflation, particularly in Europe, is shown signs of topping, although that evidence is starting to build quite rapidly in the U.S.
And Julian, how much would you say, how much of what's going on in the U.K. would you ascribe to the choppiness that we've seen in U.S. markets? Or is it more the case that what's happening with our stock market, for instance, the last couple of days, we can more ascribe, you know, blame what's going on with interest rates or whatever else?
Well, it's definitely sort of what we would call a cross-asset psychology. And the driver, as it has been the entire year, is this now positive correlation between stocks and bonds. And so as the yields continue to ratchet higher, you know, obviously the UK's rise in yields feeding into the US, feeding into Italy with the political changes over the weekend that certainly, you know, provide upside pressure to yields there as well. It's really became a bit of a snowball, which is why, from our point of view, the Bank of England had to act in a reasonably decisive manner.
You know, Julian, I was reading one of your most recent notes, and obviously the other big story of the week is set a new low in the U.S. stock market for this bear market. S&P 500 closing at the lowest since November 2020. I get the sense from your note, though, that you think the acute selling may be over, and then maybe there's a bear market rally in store for us. Is that a fair reading of your note?
We are feeling that way. Basically, from our point of view, these kinds of bear markets, and if you go back to the highs in January, they don't move in straight lines. And the last several weeks, again, in response to this ratcheting higher in yields across the globe, has been pretty much of a straight line move down in stocks, which, if you think about it, September, we don't want to go back to school. We don't want to go back to the office 4 or 5 days a week. The psychology tends to be poor in every September, but particularly so this year, because you have all this macro uncertainty and a Fed who's committed to hiking rates and keeping pressure really on the rest of the world via the stronger dollar through the rate hike transmission mechanism. But for us, we started seeing signs that this kind of activity was unsustainable. The VIX has started spiking. You've seen investor sentiment really only as bad as it's ever been near the trough in 2009 and near the bottom of the first Gulf War bear market in 1990. And so for us, those kinds of ideas, along with the fact that October tends to be a turning point for stocks, and the data that, as much as we don't want to think about midterms, the following year after midterms tends to be good as well. To us, just really given the fact that we thought that the yield moves were becoming parabolically unsustainable, we did feel and do feel that that will transmit into higher equity prices, certainly in the near term, perhaps even longer.
And I think, Julian, you wrote recently, for stocks, the bigger they fall, the harder they bounce, right? So is that part of that equation here?
Very much so. So basically at the new lows, you were down almost 25% from the highs. And what we did was we looked at the history of prior bear markets going back 50 years or so. And what we found was once you started a bear market rally, which we defined as either 5% or more over five trading days or more, from that kind of depressed level, the average run is on the order of 17-18% over the course of 35 trading days, which, interestingly enough, takes you in proximity to the 200-day moving average, which is where the market failed in its rally in August, but more importantly, takes you in proximity to not only the November 2nd Fed meeting, but also the November 8th election, which are going to be very interesting events indeed.
So all the stars are aligning in one place there. But let's talk about those midterms a little bit, Julian, because, that is something people talk about a lot, is that midterm years can often be weak in the stock market. I mean, I think you just have to chalk that up to coincidence perhaps this year, although, maybe some of the extenuatingness of the drop was related to that. But what type of scenario do you think is most constructive to stocks in this midterm? There's that sort of generalization people like that, gridlock, a divided Congress is often supportive of stocks. Is that the type of setup you think that would work best in this midterm?
So it's particularly difficult to handicap that outcome now, especially since A, you've had as negative a year as you've had thus far, and B, because the balance of power, despite the fact that the Democrats control both houses, the balance of power is so precarious. So what we'll do is we'll tell you what history actually says about this. And what history says is that there is a very pronounced outperformance over the course of 100 years worth of stock market returns when government is unified. One party controls both houses of Congress and the White House. Now, the market would, in our view, have a knee-jerk reaction lower on that kind of outcome because, A, despite the number of times that my team and I remind investors, and we've been doing this constantly since 2016, of that kind of data, people refuse to acknowledge it. Okay, that number one. And number two, the assumption is here with the presidential election, which is obviously going to be an exceptionally contentious event, whoever ends up running 2 years later, the preference would be more than likely for less action rather than more. But yet the data clearly shows that unified government, i.e. the potential for more action rather than less, has been better for stocks.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? The ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company, Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
I think in a recent note, you also said that DC is aggravating some of the recent trends. Is that right? So maybe you can talk a little bit about this, because I know you think a lot about how policy is affecting the market.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Look, from the point of view of the political situation, I don't think that there's any debate about the fact that the divisiveness and the partisanship in the country, without the ability to actually have reasoned discourse, is certainly affects markets. It affects uncertainty. It affects how people are thinking about policy. But again, when we think about further down the road on Constitution Avenue, which is the home of the Federal Reserve, there's no question about the fact that the Fed, in our view, is perhaps gone a little bit too quickly and hasn't given the markets and the economy enough time to digest the amount of hiking that has been put into the system already. And that to us has really been sort of where the pressure points have come and where our head of Evercore ISI, Ed Hyman, has taken his 2023 GDP forecast down to zero. So it tells you that in a lot of ways, the Fed is thinking very closely that a recession might be a necessary condition to get inflation under control, certainly not desirable, but countenancing that kind of outcome, as was the case 40 years ago during the Volcker administration. So all of these underpin volatility.
Well, let's talk about that November Fed meeting coming up, Julian. You know, I think it's safe to say that the Fed sort of surprised most investors by being more hawkish at the September meeting than perhaps a lot of people were expecting. The initial sense was that we'd get at least 75 basis points in November and again in December. Some, I think, were even thinking perhaps a full 100 basis points at least one of the meetings. But, you know, financial conditions have tightened quite a bit since then, in part because of the UK and just the reaction to the hawkish Fed itself. is have they tightened enough for maybe the Fed to reconsider 75 basis points, maybe go to 50 in the next two meetings?
So the first thing I'll say is that the fact that you could have an outcome more hawkish than those 8 minutes at Jackson Hole was shocking. I think it was shocking to the markets. It certainly shocked us. But what we think is the Fed is really potentially in its zeal to not commit the mistakes of the mid-1970s, i.e. Chairman of the Fed, Arthur Burns, cut rates in the middle of the inflation firestorm because there was an oncoming recession. Ultimately, he was able to, cause the recession to dissipate. But the outcome was inflation remaining higher for much longer. The Fed might actually be making a different kind of mistake in a similar type of way. By over-tightening, you really get to the point where you may have to cut rates, despite the fact that the Fed has been adamant about not wanting to do that. And from our point of view, you know, what do you do if you've got a GDP quarter or quarters? We've already had two negative quarters, even though this is not a recession, in 2022. But what if you had a negative three quarter and it was clear that there might be a need to cut rates? At the same time, inflation stays, call it above 3%, which is a number not tolerable to the Fed. That's a conundrum that really, really could have serious reverberations. And that's part of our view that the Fed might be better served, instead of being dogmatic about doing 75 in November, being more open-minded about what it may or may not do. And I think it's entirely possible over the next number of days that we see some commentary from other Fed governors that perhaps the door is open to a little bit of flexibility.
Julian, you're very prolific with your note writing, which makes my job so much easier. And I read all of your notes, but this is why I have to, I've been referencing a lot of them so much. So one of them said the Fed's base case is a recession in 2023. So do you think that stocks already have priced something like that in?
So we'll clarify that just a little. That was dramatic intent. So the Fed's base case, if you look at the summary of economic projections, is 1% growth or thereabouts in 2023. However, its projection of the unemployment rate at 4.4%, up from the trough this July at 3.5%, really is an implicit, call it nod, to the probability of recession being close to 100%, because you've never had that kind of rise in unemployment without a recession happening really almost subsequently in very near time. And so for us, when we think about how stocks are priced, a deep recession is absolutely not priced in right now. Because if you look at 100 years of stock market history, the average recession bear market ends up being down on the order of 41.5%. We're only down around 25% at the trough, but we still think there's enough uncertainty and enough potential, particularly if you had other geopolitical positive developments, lessening the tensions in Russia or perhaps, something positive occurring in China, all outliers right now. But this entire year has been a series of outliers. So we don't want to fully, eliminate the upside tail risk along with recognizing the degree of the downside tail risk.
That's what I was going to ask you. How realistic is it to think of some improving rhetoric out of Moscow? I mean, the other big story, obviously, this week was that Nord Stream pipeline mysteriously malfunctioning and springing a leak in the middle of the ocean. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation that perhaps it was sabotaged by Russia. That hasn't been confirmed. But I think a lot of people are just assuming that to be the case, Russia sort of sending a signal. How bad could this winter get for Europe? Has the market really priced in that worst case scenario so far? Or could there be a further negative shock that really roils markets due to the Russia-Europe tension?
So if you got a terrible winter, I cannot imagine that that's priced in, rivers icing over and so on and so forth. But if you actually look at natural gas futures traded in Europe, they peaked earlier in the spring. Yes, they've remained at this very elevated level that clearly is going to put an enormous amount of pressure on the European and the UK consumer. But on the other hand, it really hasn't. What's happening is the market is adjusting to a base case where Russian supply will be next to nothing for the foreseeable future. And I think if you go back several weeks ago, part of what calmed markets for at least a while was this idea that storage was proceeding on pace or even ahead of the normal seasonal build. So from that perspective, you know, combine that with getting new supplies from the U.S. and elsewhere. Could you Band-Aid it? You could. Do you need the weather to cooperate? Absolutely.
This is part of the idea that maybe potentially we could have some upside for stocks, right? The idea that we could see some positive developments maybe out of D.C. or Moscow or London, I think, is what you said recently. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look at what's happened this week thus far, the BOE's intervention and switching really on a dime from quantitative tightening to quantitative easing once more, buying bonds, is the first positive policy development, certainly in terms of stabilizing markets. And again, going back to that relationship that has been a near unity correlation between stocks and bonds recently, you could also get a positive policy development out of Tokyo in the coming days. The Japanese intervened in dollar yen a week ago or so. We would say that if they were thinking about trying to achieve maximum efficacy, they might look at the fact that the market has endorsed the Bank of England's policy response and perhaps maybe would endorse to a greater extent a further intervention by Japan. So that's something that could happen. But again, it's one of these things where you don't want to plan for a base case being positive policy developments. But when the psychology turns, as we think it could over the next few days, it's something that could make the moves in markets all the more exaggerated.
Yeah. And that's even before we get into China and the coming Communist Party Congress, which could bring some surprises, I guess, if they decide to reopen. Who knows what that'll do to markets. But Julian, I know it's great to talk to you because I know you've got an eye on every asset class and sort of all the different catalysts in the market. And I know you always keep at least one eye on the options market. And there's really been a narrative that's evolved over the last few years that options are become sort of the tail that wags the dog in the U.S. stock market, that, you know, gamma hedging and other delta hedging and other Greek letters that I don't, I'll be honest, I don't really understand completely.
Me neither.
That you know, all that hedging and expiration activity really tends to push and pull the stock market in a way that suggests the fundamentals aren't really always in charge, that the options market has sort of taken the driver's seat in the market, at least certain times a month near expiration. Is there truth to that? And how would you suggest to us non-Greek alphabet experts how to sort of look at the options market and its influence on the equity market with a reasonable sort of sober-minded view of what its influence is?
So the options market has been this evolving thing, a living, breathing organism, basically since the pandemic began. You had, you know, extraordinary call option volumes in the summer of 2020 as you know, the stocks, the stay-at-home stocks, basically screamed higher, driven by options activity. Then you had, obviously, the meme stocks in spring of 2021 being pushed by options activity. And now what's fascinating, and this is something we never really expected that would happen, is that there is still a speculative element in the markets, despite the fact that we've had as poor a year as we've had, that instead of buying stocks, is actually buying call options and parking its cash in treasuries. So in essence, what you're doing is you're getting the risk-free rate on a portion of your holdings, and yet you're actually getting the same exposure that you would be getting through holding stocks via holding options. So there's a leverage component there as well. And what it does is it exacerbates the moves in both sides, and we've certainly seen that in recent weeks. But interestingly enough, if you're someone who's thinking about hedging with options, and we don't think that's for everyone, it actually makes hedging both upside and downside more appealing depending on the kinds of things that you're looking to hedge. For example, in the energy sector, there has been an outright fear of recession. At the same time, there's been an outright fear that a favorable resolution to Russia would depress oil prices. So really what you're having is that all in, there's complete discounting of, you know, conditions where multiples are half that versus the rest of the index. And for options people, you're seeing that in fear of puts being much more expensive. But to us, that's an opportunity. So what I think the message is that you can find these relationships, and because we now have the end of free money and we have, you know, quote unquote, real yields. I joke with my sons that maybe they're going to have interest on their checking account one of these days, weeks or months, that these relationships are much more interesting to express and to also analyze where the market may go.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
So you told me that your answer to what goes up these days is that we're seeing a bull market in cash, and everybody's bringing up cash the last couple of days to me, and you know how parking your money in cash or you know short dated treasuries or whatever. So what is it that is making cash so appealing right now?
So obviously the Fed is behind all of this, no question about it. The rapidity with which the hiking has occurred, but it's also this idea, and if you go back to the spring, when we first started suggesting that investors overweight cash as stocks started to weaken, we got pushback because, well, how could you possibly lock in a -5 rate of return when inflation was trading at 8%? And our answer to that was, well, the thing about cash is in a portfolio context, it helps you manage and it helps you buy when you should be buying, not sell when you should be buying. And that's what we've seen from time to time, particularly at the July low. And for us, it really becomes this whole idea that, you know, the whole concept of TINA, there is no alternative to stocks, is a thing of the past, and we don't think it's coming back anytime soon, supporting the bull market in cash.
And now I think, Mike, the new acronym is TERA. There's a reasonable TERA alternative.
Yeah, Goldman Sachs.
I like that.
TERA.
Yeah, that was Goldman Sachs. Julie, the only way to make a name for yourself in this industry anymore is a good acronym. You gotta work on a good acronym. I don't know. Maybe this podcast needs a good acronym.
Yeah, we can try to think of one.
Tara. Well, you know, it's interesting the conversation around real yields, Julian, because I think it's sort of depends on how you define real yields, right? You know, if the inflation at 8 or 9% and treasuries are at 3.5, 4, yeah, okay, that's deeply negative. But, you know, looking out at the break-even inflation rates, you know, basically the difference between yields on nominal treasuries and inflation protected treasuries. You know, that break-even rate's, what, like 2.35% over 10 years, which signals that the bond market's best guess is inflation will average around 2.35 over the next 10 years. Are they right? Are the break-evens right, do you think? Or is that just a mispriced, another mispriced market right now?
So again, we tend from point to point not to argue with the concept that market pricing is right because it's where you can transact at any moment. Look, looking out over the longer term, if you think about Ed Hyman's forecast for inflation next year, it's 3%, clearly far north of that 235, 240 number. Are we eventually going to get back closer to 2%? Absolutely we are. And frankly, that's part of our concern with the Fed perhaps not stepping back to assess the effect of the tightening that we've seen. But point blank, what it does reinforce is this whole idea that if we believed as investors that this was the 1970s, ingrained, you know, inflation expectations in high single digits, potentially low double digits for weeks and months and years on end, this is not the 1970s. As a child, we were on a four-hour gas line waiting for my mother to fill the car up. That's not what this is.
I think you called, so when you were talking about stocks and bonds in a recent note, both being negative this year, you called it breathtaking, I think was the word. Can you talk about how unusual that is? I wrote about a risk parity ETF that has seen a record drawdown. I think it's down something like 32-33% from the highs it reached last November. So how unusual is it for both stocks and bonds to be down as much as we've seen this year?
So we've been showing a scatter plot of the stock bond return quadrants going back to 1977. And 2022 is a lower left outlier on the orders of magnitude, such that you've only actually ever seen one other year where the returns on the combined stock bond portfolio were both negative and only marginally so. And that was 1994, the year that people were trying at the beginning of the hiking cycle to equate to. Obviously, you've seen volatility of a much higher order there. But what it really does is when you have this kind of correlation, it calls into question risk parity, 130-30 strategies, and frankly, the employment of leverage across any investing strategy, as well as a rethink of what valuations make sense, because there's a very good argument to be made that the valuation paradigm of the last decade or so, which is closer to 18, 19, 20 times, is no longer the correct way to assess what stocks are worth.
Yeah. So, Julian, let's so break it down for me. If I were to send you my brokerage account password and say, Julian, just set me up for the rest of the year here.
Can you do the same for me, please?
Yeah, right. What's it going to look like when you're done with it?
Oh, my goodness. The forehead's dripping from that kind of pressure.
But hey, don't worry. There's not a lot to lose in there. So, you know.
So what we think is that, particularly when you look out towards year end and when you think about this heightened probability of recession, the thing that's most attractive to us is probably the thing that, given the last week, is the most difficult to buy, and that's longer term bonds. Whether it's thinking about inflation breakevens, thinking about a heightened probability of recession, thinking about the importation of tighter financial conditions from around the globe, to us, it really makes sense to go back to at least what has happened over the last couple of years is the typical 60-40 bond portfolio has gravitated to 65-35 or 70-30, because we've all been sold on this idea that owning government bonds was a negative expected return outcome. And it's been true in large part for the last 2 years. We haven't been positive on bonds since 2019. We think that's where you want to dip your toe in first. Again, if you want to get your equity exposure, which clearly as a function of the portfolio breakdown, if you have any cash at all, by default, your cash levels have been rising, you probably do want to put a little bit more in equities. And then let's see how policy and earnings play out, because we have had earnings downgrades. We're likely to have them again, but the market knows this. So it may be calm with something that doesn't look like the potential for a deep earnings recession, perhaps just a shallow one.
And Julian, just to wrap things up, I think you recently downgraded your year and price target for the S&P 500. So how do we square that with, you know, what we were talking about earlier about the potential for a rally post the midterms?
Well, what's amazing is, and again, in this market, things evolve literally by the minute or the hour, not by the day, week, or month, as is typical in, you know, really the bull market of the last 10 years or so. So when we took our price target down to $39.75 a week and a half ago or so, we were probably viewed as still being, you know, quite bearish in that context. And then all of a sudden, here we are, the market's trading, breaking through the lows at 36.36, and we're looking like some of the biggest bulls on Wall Street. So what we're really trying to do is, you know, strike the trade-off between what we felt are these oversold conditions that have the potential for a rebound with the positive fourth quarter seasonality. And again, when you think about next year, it's one thing to get your asset allocation to where you're comfortable, but it's another to make assumptions at this point about how the market is going to behave next year with high conviction because the range of outcomes is so large.
Great stuff. That is Julian Emanuel. He is the chief equity and quantitative strategist at Evercore ISI. Julian, always such a pleasure to hear your thoughts and catch up with how you're looking at things in the market. No secret, I think, Valdana, Julian's one of my favorites of the strategists out there. And he always picks up the phone, which is nice. He always gets back to you.
He's so nice to us.
Pleasure. A nice guy, a brilliant guy. But Julian, we can't let you go without hearing your craziest thing you've seen in markets. But let's start with, first off, we got to reveal Valdana's high school nickname because we did get those 300 ratings on Apple Podcast. So a drum roll. If I had a drum, I would roll it, I guess.
Maybe Stacey, our producer, can add
a drum roll.
Yeah. A drum roll. Yeah. That would be good. For suspense. All right. My friends called me Vil.
Come on.
I'm sorry. However, I have a feeling you're going to twist that into villain. Or evil. Evil Donna.
Oh, evil. I like
evil
that.
Evil is good,
all
too.
All right. Let's go with that.
So let's go with those two, because the other one is a little bit more boring.
Evil. That's a good, I'm going with that one. That sure. Is, ooh, that is, that suits you.
It does a little. Sadly.
And of course, your nickname with the website that transcribes the podcast by listening.
Phil Dodo.
Phil Dodo.
Phil Dodo.
Also, and Madonna sometimes. I think they called you Madonna Hijack.
So we have, we have a transcription service for the podcast. So we look through the transcript, and every time I say my name, it transcribes it as Phil Dodo. Which is hilarious. I have some friends who make fun of me for that now. And another one is Madonna Hijack, which is also very good. There have been some really good ones.
How about you, Julian? Did you have a nickname in high school?
Well, I did. But the first thing I'd have to say is, based on what you just said, I have to think that there is a slice of the voice recognition software world that's probably overpriced. Still at this point.
Always a trade. He's always got a trade.
Always a trade. mine was Jules. Okay. Very simple. Jules. And I think in an environment like this, you know, Jules have probably been as good an investment as stocks or bonds or art. So certainly part of portfolio diversification.
That's good. So bringing it back.
Take it. Yeah. It always brings it back to the markets. I love it. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff. All right, well, Valdana, Evil. What is your craziest thing for the week?
So I was originally going to go with something that happened in the UK or one of these other wild moves, but I'm just going to go with something somewhat happy, which is that McDonald's is coming out with a Happy Meal for adults. And I think it's aimed at millennials, so my generation, and you get, you know, I think the option is one of four figurines when you buy your Big Mac or your Chicken McNuggets.
So what are the millennial figurines then? Is it, it's like
It's
a Taylor Swift bobblehead or something?
I wish for that I would go to McDonald's. But no, I think it's like regular McDonald's figurines.
Uh-huh. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how successful that will be. I don't picture millennials eating a lot of McDonald's, to be honest. You guys seem too healthy for that. Is that fair?
We love cauliflower, all of us.
Yeah, all you eat is cauliflower.
Mm-hmm.
Exclusively. All right, well, that's a pretty good one. Julian, how about you? What's the craziest thing you've seen in markets these days?
Well, I first got to pay tribute to the concept that I lived through college on 99-cent special Big Macs. So
now I they're like $6.
Yeah, exactly. I paid 13 in Zurich a couple of years ago. Ooh. So, you know, inflation and, you know, the risk-free arbitrage amongst currencies and countries, just not there. So I have to pay tribute to the UK, and I have to pay tribute to a legendary president, Ronald Reagan. In our view, the fact that that Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng didn't fully appreciate the fact that their policy announcements, tax cuts, subsidies for energy and so on, would be as destabilizing in the near term as it has been to markets, doesn't recognize the fact that they probably would have been better off announcing their policy in cowboy boots and chaps the same way President Ronald Reagan did in the early 1980s on top of his horse when he announced his version of Reaganomics that shot directly against the Volcker Fed the same way that the UK is trying to shoot against the Bank of England. And frankly, for us, that kind of display of revelry and fine sartorial splendor might have been able to sell the markets a bit better. But alas, we've needed the Bank of England to step in, and hopefully it will have a happy ending.
I'd love to see her riding a horse with chaps and a cowboy hat down Downing Street. That would go. I think that would go over splendidly. All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. I have to think about Liz Truss and cowboy boots and a hat. Can't own it the way Reagan did, though. That's that was his signature look. All right, well, I'll give you mine. This is courtesy of Bloomberg, our own Mark Elwood. He wrote about the investment market for handbags. Veldada, how many handbags do you own?
Just one.
Just one?
I have, okay, two.
Two
okay,
handbags.
Maybe three. No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. Literally
and
two.
And what's the most you've ever paid for a handbag?
I think honestly it was like $99. So that's, not part of the whatever article you read.
That still sounds like a lot to me for
Can be like $10,000.
Well, I know. Well, this story's all about some of the most ridiculous ones. There's the Birkin bag, I guess.
Yeah, that's like $10,000 or more.
That is like the most expensive, a so black Birkin in crocodile.
Oh.
Crocodile skin. So I guess it's actually made out of a crocodile hide. Fetched $208,000 3 years ago.
Wow.
But here's where we get to play the prices precise. Julian, I regret to inform you, you're now a contestant on a little game show we have here called The Price is Precise.
Not the Price is Right,
because I'm afraid of Bob Barker, but The Price is Precise. And because this story discusses, Credit Suisse actually did a analysis of Chanel handbags and what they did over the trailing 12 months ended in June. Now, think back into June, okay? It was an awful period for market sentiment. Bonds were falling, stocks were in a bear market, everything was doing awful. What do you think Credit Suisse study of Chanel handbags said that those handbags did? What was their return over the previous 12 months as of June? Veldada, we'll start with you.
In percents?
Percentage terms. Think of it as a Chanel handbag index.
I think up 150.
150%?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Even though, I mean, stocks were in a bear market, bonds were in a bear market.
Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about this.
You think Chanel was the ultimate safe haven, up 150. Julian, what do you think Chanel handbags' trailing 12-month return was as of June?
Well, you can't have an equity strategist in a bear market giving numbers like that. But I would say it's probably somewhere on the order of 25 or 30% because, again, this was the year where we were all coming out of our homes and reengaging. And boy, if you don't look good when you're seeing people you haven't seen in 2 years, you don't have a second chance to make a new first impression.
So you're saying 25, 30%. Veldani, yep. You said 150?
Yes.
This is why Julian is the chief strategist.
I thought I was close.
Everquer ISI. You hit it right on the head there, Julian. That's amazing. 24.5%
from
the previous year.
I was shooting for the stars.
Who knew the ultimate safe haven was a purse, basically a purse. I won't have to buy one.
I'll get you one. I'll get you one next time I go to Europe.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, right. Next,
instead of ham.
No, you fill it with ham. If you get me a luxury handbag and fill it with Iberico ham, then that it's a deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm impressed, Julian. You nailed it on the head. I think maybe he saw that report. What do you think, Valdana?
He's shaking his head no.
He's just that good.
Evercore ISI.
He only reads Evercore.
And Bloomberg.
He is just that good. Julian, thank you so much for your time. We always appreciate it. And I hope we can get you back again.
Thank you.
Thank you, Julian.
What Goes Up will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal website and app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts so more listeners can find us. And you can find us on Twitter. Follow me at @Reganonymous. Valdana Hyryk is at Valdana Hyryk. You can also follow Bloomberg Podcasts at Podcasts. What Goes Up is produced by Stacey Wong. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
You know success when you see it. Or you think you do. The people in the spotlight. Athletes, actors, artists. But what about the people behind the scenes? You know, the ones who make it all happen. The lighting engineers, the sideline photographers, the caterers. They're small business masterminds. And if there's one thing they have in common, it's making their money work harder. That's why they have a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, where they are now earning a generous 5% annual percentage yield. Yes, 5% APY. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.